Israel National Radio, live, on demand, and download. Connect to Israel through Israel National Radio, your newsstand from the Holy Land.
What a destiny, fixed by divine will. Israel is to possess the land of Canaan forever, again provoked by cruel exploitation. And armed with little more than a fierce independence, Israel found itself in open revolt against Rome, the iron-fisted masters of the world.
Israel, Appointment with Destiny. This stirring documentary has been hailed as a most inspiring historical portrayal of the Jewish people. Check out IsraelsDestiny.com. That's IsraelsDestiny.com.
All right, we're back here at Israel National Radio's Weekend Edition. I'm Tamar Yonah.
I'm Yehuda Cohen. We have with us Mr. Tarpley on the line. Mr. Tarpley, you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you were speaking earlier of the world that the financiers created, not the country, not just America, but the world that they created, meaning it doesn't only affect the United States of America. What's going on behind the scenes in American politics affects the entire world, as we see from current events. Now, before you came on the show, Tamar and I were discussing how some of the terrible things that have been going on in Israel over the last few years, most notably the expulsion of Jews from their homes and the shrinking of Israel's borders, these are actually being orchestrated and directed by foreign powers committed to globalization.
Yes, I think there's some evidence. I mean, I can't comment so much on the internal side of it, but here's an interesting fact or story, at least. At the Group of Eight Summit, which was held in St. Petersburg, Russia, last summer in 2006, at the moment that the Lebanon-Israeli war broke out, there was a debate about what to do, and President Chirac of France proposed making some kind of a statement. And George Bush turned on Chirac with great rage and said, "Listen, Chirac, make no mistake. The attack on Lebanon is not an Israeli war, but it is an American war which we have assigned and delegated to the Israelis to carry out." And I think that is a very interesting and important statement. I think that you would have to look at the entire question of war and peace from the point of view that right now the worst adventurers, the most irresponsible imperialist aggressors, there's no other term, are the ones in Washington, and that anybody who attaches themselves to the Cheney cabal does so at tremendous risk.
And this began with Cheney? This isn't the Cheney invention. This has been going on for decades.
Sure, but I tried to point out the question of Prescott, Bush, and Hitler, which was indicative of a much broader. There's a tremendous support in Wall Street for Hitler in the sense that they believe Hitler is the solution to their Stalin problem. And, of course, it turns out much different than they think. So these people are meddlers, they're bunglers, they're geostrategic fools, in the sense that the things that seem to be reasonable to them generally tend to backfire on them. There's also a whole British dimension with Lady Astor and the Clifton set also supporting Hitler at the same time. But now let's look at the grandsons of those people, from Prescott Bush to the current tenant of the White House.
Right, so to keep it local, like if we look at especially King George I, George H.W. Bush, who was president between 1988 and 1992, I mean, we used to have leaders in Israel, and I'm going to keep coming back to Israel because I think it's relevant to a lot of our listeners how this, you know, how this world that was created is affecting our survival here. We had prime ministers once upon a time who saw themselves as leaders of a country, and President Bush, the first Bush, tried to pressure Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir to do things which were dangerous for Israel, and Shamir essentially said to him, "You know, you're president of the United States, I'm prime minister here, let me run my country, you run yours." Now, George Bush, in addition to Secretary of State Baker at the time, interfered in Israeli elections in order to remove Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir from power. And since then, every prime minister of Israel over the last 15 years has seen himself as a puppet to a Western vassal, a Western power. Now, you know, we have a current situation where both sides of the conflict in the Middle East are being armed by the same governments. You know, nearly every world power worked to prevent the state of Israel from coming into being, including Truman. And since 1967, the international community has been determined to shrink Israel's borders. So when we have a situation where America, including Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice only a few days ago, talking about shrinking our borders back to what they were before the Six-Day War, how do we reconcile this with the Bush administration kind of using Israel to fight their wars for them, while at the same time trying to shrink and weaken us?
Well, I would, of course, recommend that you not trust the Bush administration for one second in any way. But I think we probably have a disagreement in the sense that I would argue that the only way you'll ever be independent is by making peace with the neighbors.
I agree, but first of all,
as long as you don't
100%.
Have some kind of a living arrangement with the countries
right.
in the region,
yes.
you're always going to be dependent on some outside force then for various kinds of military aid and so forth.
I agree with you 100%. We're on the same page with that.
But right now, it is really the Cheney faction that is
right.
interested in solving its whole array of domestic political problems, its problems in court with a lot of its leaders going into court and getting convicted for various crimes. There's another aspect we haven't mentioned, but it's very important. This past week has, I think, been a real turning point for the dollar-based international financial system, in the sense that we had about a 5% fall in the Wall Street stock market. But much more serious than that behind the scenes is the fact that if you now want to do a leveraged buyout of a corporation or some huge stock deal, which has really been the only way that demand has been generated in the stock markets in the past couple of years, all the money for that has dried up. Here in the United States, we have home foreclosures going at a tremendous rate. It indicates that there's a very profound crisis in the entire financial system, and this is then translated into increased adventurism on the side of somebody like Cheney. And of course, when I say Cheney, I don't mean this old guy that you see. He's an elderly alcoholic. He's had he just had his pacemaker recharged over the weekend. He's had four heart attacks and quadruple bypass surgery, and he's had three or four or five pacemakers and so forth. So I don't mean him, but I mean his controllers, his backers, the financiers who tell Cheney what to do.
Can you name some of them for us?
Well, it's a faction of the Anglo-American finance community. You can associate it with George Shultz. He's a man who's been Secretary of Labor, Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of State then under
Reagan.
And Shultz is he's the guy who picked Arnold Schwarzenegger to be governor of California.
Is Schwarzenegger part of this?
Well, Schwarzenegger is their fair-haired boy for governor of California, and there you have another Nazi connection, interestingly
right.
enough. The other thing that Shultz did is, of course, the current administration, be it Bush, be it Cheney, be it Condoleezza, Wolfowitz, the original Vulcan group, they were all explicitly chosen by George Shultz and above all the other financiers around him. The other person in that group is Rupert Murdoch, who's attempting these days to take over the Wall Street Journal. And this is another British pole of this same faction. So this is the group, I think, that feels that their fortunes are in grave danger for strategic reasons, for these economic reasons. It seemed like for a couple of weeks that we were going towards dollar hyperinflation, and we may still be. In other words, it may be that the answer of the Federal Reserve to this current round of difficulties in Wall Street is simply to print money at an even faster rate, at which point we would have a hyperinflation similar to that in Germany in 1923, maybe, when you took your money to the supermarket in a wheelbarrow and you brought home your purchases in your pocket. So this is a gang that I would stay away from. I think it would be important for Israel, say, as a country in the Middle East, to develop perhaps an option vis-a-vis Russia. Now, there's a country that seems to be on a much better footing in the sense of a much more intelligent leader, a much more stable, methodical approach to things.
But we have a problem with Russia. Russia's been actively arming people around us and trying to provoke them into war with us. I don't know if they're any better or worse than their leadership in the United States today, but they seem to be just as dangerous for us.
Let
me just jump in and reroute this conversation, because we don't have a lot of time. I want to ask you about your, it's not your prediction, but what you're reporting is that people are saying that this possible mega terror attack that perhaps they're saying Cheney is going to help orchestrate, God forbid, is going to give an excuse to put in martial law. Why would Bush and his government want to clamp down martial law on American citizens?
Well, I think the example they have before them is that of Madrid in Spain back in March of 2004, when you had these bombs in the Madrid subway and commuter railroad system, killed about 250 people. And if you do the math, that's comparable for a country the size of Spain, comparable to September 11th here in the United States. At that time, the Prime Minister of Spain was yet another fascist, Aznar. Aznar is part of the descendancy of the Francisco Franco fascist phalangist party of Spain. So now here's a fascist of a slightly different type. And what Aznar tried to do after those bombs went off, the bombs, I believe, were placed by NATO intelligence for various kinds of reasons we could go into. But what Aznar tried to do when the bombs went off was to say, all right, that's it. There's an election scheduled in 3 days. I'm calling it off. I'm going to declare myself dictator. I'm going to rule by decree. Now, he was stopped by a number of things. I think they were factors of institutional resistance, perhaps associated with the king of Spain, right?
So you're saying that Bush would do this in order to make like an emergency government, and therefore he has to stay in power?
Yes, to freeze himself into power. That's what
I'm
saying.
So you don't believe that there's going to be an election in 2009?
I think this is now a question mark. I know a lot of people who have countdown clocks. In the United States, one of the hot items is a countdown clock. It'll tell you exactly how many days, minutes, hours, seconds remain until noon on January 20th, 2009, because people can't wait to get rid of the failed presidency of Bush Cheney. But I say to every one of them when I see a countdown clock, don't kid yourself. It's not that simple. Aznar tried to perpetuate himself in power. The only thing that stopped Aznar, by the way, was a general strike of one-third of the entire Spanish people. And I challenge Americans, are you guys capable of doing that? Right now, I don't think you are. I don't think you're as good and active and politically alert as the Spanish were. In this country, we have a tradition of responding to these terrorist provocations with gullibility, stupidity, passivity, propitiation, fear, and so forth. Look at the Spanish. They just got angry and kicked out this leader.
So you're saying that America wants to start a war, go in and bomb Iran?
Not America.
So
no, I don't think America. I think there's
three
desperados around Bush Cheney.
The government. Let's say the government.
Mr. Tarpley, let me ask you something.
The regime.
You're talking about this being staged in order to keep Bush and Cheney in power. But my question is, aren't the bad guys behind the scenes, you know, grooming someone else to take over? I mean, wouldn't they be able to push their agenda forward with a Hillary Clinton or a Rudy Giuliani more effectively than with a failed presidency that people are already sick of?
I think that's a very, very intelligent, that's an accurate comment, that Mrs. Clinton is, she's attempting to profile herself as a warmonger every bit as big as Bush, a warmonger of a slightly different color. Giuliani, of course, is somebody who has his own authoritarian overtones. When he was mayor of New York, he lived there
at the time.
Essentially threw the First Amendment out the window. If you wanted to draw a picture on the sidewalk, you were going to be rounded up by the cops. So that is true. But there's a large group now of neocons who feel that if Bush Cheney are catapulted out, that a lot of people are going to face criminal prosecutions. In other words, this government right now is a storm cellar for various kinds of felons, and they have a tremendous collective interest. It's a little bit like the regicides, right? If you go back to England in the 17th century, once they'd killed the king, everybody who took part in killing the king had to make sure they stayed in power at all costs, because otherwise they would be put on trial. And I think we have a storm cellar for felons going here in Washington, D.C., and they don't ever want to lose power. Now, whether that's enough to determine the entire system, I don't know. I obviously hope not. But again, it's not just me saying this, but if you have a whole spectrum of people, from Paul Craig Roberts, Pat Buchanan, all the way over to Professor James Fetzer in Minnesota, to Chasudovsky up in Canada, they're all pointing to August now as yet another great moment of danger, when the Cheney faction might pull a false flag, synthetic terrorist operation, and use that as a ticket to war with Iran. And I would also warn Americans The problem with war in Iran is you will lose it. It'll be another lost war. You will not be able to solve your Iraq problems by escalating to the nuclear level with Iran. That will not work, and it will be another lost war. There are even people in this country who are talking about an attack on Pakistan. And here we get to real absurdity, because now we're talking 160 million people with some kind of nuclear devices that they have. And this is now the very midsummer of madness.
But let me ask you a question. What are you going to do when you have someone like Ahmadinejad from Iran, who will have the atomic bomb soon, and he's already come to the UN in New York, U.S. territory, and has, not that I'm pro-Bush, but he's besmirched the U.S. president. He's saying how we're going to get you infidels, and Israel, the big Satan, the little Satan, first the Saturday people, then the Sunday people. Isn't it better to get him now before he has nuclear capability than waiting until after he does?
First of all, I don't think you're going to get him. In other words, you might get him, but you're not going to get 75 million people in Iran, and you're not going to get then what that will tend to set into motion. I can remember a guy called Khrushchev, and Khrushchev came to New York City and banged his shoe on the table and said, "We will bury you," he said to the United States, or at least "we will be present at your funeral," was the actual translation. In those days, everybody knew that war was so dangerous that nobody would go into it lightly. I don't remember any politician saying, "All right, that's it. We've had it. Time for World War III. You've insulted us." Today we have a very strange situation, because the politicians here are trying to convince you that Iran is more dangerous than the Soviet Union ever was, and they're proposing this kind of an attack, whereas when there really was a dangerous enemy, they had the sense not to do it. So I think this is overestimated, and it's all filtered through the needs of these neocons, starting with Bush Cheney, to keep the country in a situation of perpetual war, perpetual mobilization, and so forth. So I would say all of this stuff can be dealt with by deterrence and by negotiation. And
I'd like to see that, because I want to tell you that Iran and Israel are both members of the United Nations, and according to the United Nations rules, one member state is not allowed to threaten the destruction of another one, and we see this going on over and over again, and the UN does nothing to stop this.
Well,
and Israel is going to have to act.
Israel has no business being in the UN.
Okay, fine, but I would just say, if someone's threatening me, and we've already had attempted genocides a few times in our history, I would eat them for lunch before they eat me for dinner. Get them before they've got the bomb.
But then it's Israel's job, not America's.
And then you save lives rather than having more people kill.
But then it's Israel's responsibility and not America's responsibility.
Fine. I don't need America to do my work. If someone's threatening me, I'm going to take care of it. I need America.
So then Israel should do it.
Tamar, the problem with threats is, if we go back and we want to look at all the threats that have been made on all the various sides, we're going to find a catalog of threats coming from all sorts of people. And I think purely verbal threats that we can't.
But these aren't
policy.
Verbal threats. We know that Iran is stockpiling weapons and giving them over to the Hezbollah and Syria. We know what they're doing. They're financing the terrorists. We know what they're doing.
Yeah, remember, Mr. Tarpley, they are trying to hurt us pretty bad. I mean, we have a right to
obviously,
fight.
But if you want to hear what their version would be, to say, well, Israel probably has 500 or 600 nuclear weapons,
but
and we feel
don't,
threatened.
But we don't make threats that we're going to bomb people. That's the difference. We don't.
Oh, I think if we, I can remember Avigdor Lieberman saying that he wanted to blow up the Aswan High Dam, and of course that would then sweep, you know, 10 million Egyptians out into the Mediterranean Sea. So I think we can't. This doesn't get us anywhere.
The truth is, I can't take responsibility for what Avigdor Lieberman says. He makes a good point. Lieberman might say stupid things that people can compare to President Ahmadinejad.
But, and then at the end of the day, we've got to have a policy that goes forward. And I would say the Israeli government ought to resist the siren call of Cheney, which is to join in this new crusade against Iran, because I think that is the actual dynamic.
Well, they're two different things. There's Cheney's crusade against Iran, and there's Israel's desire to live. And I think that to put them all in one, look, I don't see Israel as part of the West. I don't see Israel as part of this neocon crusade against Islam. I myself do not identify with the neocons in the United States. But I think, unlike, you know, just like the Allies were fighting the Nazis in World War II, too, but both sides were screwing the Jews. Today you have this Bush-Cheney faction and the Islamists on the other side, both trying to screw the Jews. And in order for us to survive, we are going to have to take some kind of action, whether it's against Cheney or whether it's against Iran. Israel's going to have to do something, otherwise we're going to be either nuked or shrink to nothing.
Or the UN, if they want to make do this peacefully by diplomatic measures, if they're going to put sanctions on Iran, if they can do it, fine. Nobody wants to go to war. Well,
let me,
at least
let me
none
point
of us
out
do.
That the world is maybe more complex than this seems to reflect. There is something called the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. In other words, in the world, if you don't like the U.S. and the British, you do have an alternative, and it's the Shanghai Cooperation Organization.
Is there an email address?
That's Russia, China, and the four Central Asian groups, but it's open to all kinds of countries, and it seems to me that there are other diplomatic alternatives. But the main question is, during the next year and a half approximately, the dying neocon regime of Bush-Cheney is going to lash out, I think, in some way to try to protect itself. And I would say it would not be in anybody's interest to become simply a pawn of that. And I think that is the threat to the Israeli side going forward. And again, watch very carefully the developments in the financial markets, because the U.S. and the British have built their empire on the basis of the dollar. And this is now in the process of breaking up and collapsing. So it's also important to diversify in a financial sense. In other words, don't have all your reserves in dollars, but get some euros, get some gold, get some yen. The world is much bigger than just a choice between the Iranian regime and the U.S. and the British on the other side.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Webster Tarpley. And again, you can go download his book, and you can purchase his other books on his website, tarpley.net. Thanks so much for being with us. Very
thank
interesting
you very
what you have
much.
To say. And we'll chew on that. I just want to say one more thing, actually, about someone here at the studio made a point that Avigdor Lieberman, if he said anything about exploiting the dam, first of all, Egypt is supplying our enemies with more weaponry. But again, Avigdor Lieberman is not a head of state. He's not in the chain of command here at all.
First of all, Avigdor Lieberman is not in the chain of command. I personally see Lieberman as one of the most dangerous politicians on the horizon, only because he happens to say a lot of what Peres said 15 years ago. I believe Lieberman is being groomed to be the next Ariel Sharon, meaning the next, you know, macho, racist, tough guy who's going to come and give away all the parts of Israel that Olmert's too weak to give away. Lieberman already has talked about NATO troops, as did Chaim Ramon.
Terrible.
Lieberman talks about joining the European Union, abolishing the
It seems like he's part of the...
Absolutely.
It's like he's
and
part
he's
of
connected,
the big boys,
and Mr. Topley should know that Lieberman is connected to Russia, if any of our politicians are connected to the Russian regime, which I think is completely corrupt. Putin is an ex-KGB agent who happens to be running Russia like it's the KGB today, and supplying Iran with nuclear weapons, and Hezbollah, and Syria, and Hamas. I think Lieberman should definitely there's something very ominous about Avigdor Lieberman, and we should be very weary.
Well, that's the end of the show. It was great doing the show with you, Yehuda.
Thank you for
coming on and taking Malka's place today. And interesting stuff we covered during the show. Do I agree with it all? No. What do you agree with? Find out yourself. Go to the website. Download his book. Download it for free. Make your own conclusions. And thanks, everyone, for being with us. Next up, we have, I believe, Walter's World. And so stay tuned.
Thank you.
JewishUniverse.net. Your one-stop site for all things Jewish on the internet. Torah, recipes, synagogue listings, music, business, and more.
Oh, I just love JewishUniverse.net. I check it every week before Shabbos.
JewishUniverse.net, the ultimate Jewish web portal. JewishUniverse.net for all your Jewish internet needs. JewishUniverse.net.